Welcome to The Debate. You know, right now, as you're sitting in a chair or maybe walking down the street, you intuitively trust the ground beneath you.
Right. You assume it's solid.
Exactly. You assume the floor has this solid, independent reality simply because it pushes back against your shoes. I mean, it holds your weight. It stops you from falling into the center of the earth.
Yeah.
But what if the very fact that this floor holds you up, its unquestionable physical solidity, is actually the exact proof that it is entirely an illusion?
I mean, it sounds completely absurd on its face. Because while that floor holds your weight perfectly well, the profound reality is that the solidity you feel, the independent existence you perceive, is fundamentally a deception.
Right.
In the highly refined Prasangika system of Buddhist philosophy, this everyday reality is known as a conventional truth. And yet, in a twist that kind of upends everything we intuitively believe, being a conventional truth is practically synonymous with being a falsity.
And that paradox is exactly the central tension we're unpacking today. When we look at everyday phenomena, a wooden table, a ceramic cup, the floor beneath us, or even the strict laws of cause and effect, are these conventional truths best understood as a valid functional framework that is absolutely essential for our existence?
Or conversely, should they primarily be viewed as deceptive falsities, like illusions that only appear true to an ignorant, grasping mind?
Exactly. And this disagreement emerges directly from the source material detailing the facets of conventional reality, the fluidity of our agreements, and the Majjhamaka distinction between conventional and ultimate truths.
Right. So we are going to drill down into the very nature of conventional truth, the fluidity of how we label the world around us, and what it actually means to lack inherent existence while still somehow managing to function in the universe.
So I'll be arguing that conventional reality, our shared agreements, and the functional existence of the everyday world is a perfectly valid, indispensable framework. It's not something to be merely brushed aside as a mistake. In fact, conventional reality is inextricably bound as one nature with ultimate reality.
And I'll be arguing that, well, while we certainly have to use these everyday conventions to survive, conventional truths are fundamentally deceptive illusions. They are falsities whose way of appearing completely contradicts their actual way of existing.
Okay.
They are true only as far as a mind contaminated by ignorance is concerned. And we have to be incredibly careful not to overvalidate a mirage just because we happen to be thirsty.
Well, I think to really ground this for someone listening, we have to start with the sheer validity of conventional existence. The world works.
Sure, on a surface level.
Not just the surface level. When we don't philosophically analyze a car or a cup of coffee too closely, things appear and function perfectly well in daily life. Take the classic analogy of paper money. Imagine I hand you a crisp $100 bill.
Okay, I'll take it.
Right? To you, that piece of paper represents groceries for the week. It pays your electric bill. It literally sustains your life.
Yeah.
But if I take that exact same piece of paper and hand it to my dog, it's just something to chew on. The paper itself doesn't possess $100 of inherent value radiating from its own side, hidden inside its fibers.
Right. It's just cotton and ink.
Exactly. But by shared conventional agreement, it functions perfectly. And this is my core point. If we reject conventional existence simply because it lacks ultimate independent substance, we plunge straight into the dangerous extreme of nihilism.
But nobody is advocating for nihilism here.
But you risk it. The everyday world of karma, of causes producing consistent effects, functions flawlessly. I mean, a seed grows into a tree, not a rock. Without that valid conventional existence, society, ethics, and compassion simply cannot operate. We have to respect the perfect functionality of this framework as a profound reality in its own right.
I understand the desire to protect the tangible world, but we really have to look closely at the psychological mechanism at play here. Let's examine the actual Tibetan term for conventional truth, which is kunzab denpa.
Right, kunzab.
This isn't just about things being useful. Kunzab literally means a concealing falsity. It describes how the mind works. When you look at that $100 bill or, say, a wooden table, your eyes take in raw data. color, shape, texture.
Okay.
In a fraction of a millisecond, your mind synthesizes that data, imputes a concept onto it, and then, and here is the tragedy, it forgets that it just did that.
You're saying the mind plays a trick on itself.
Exactly. It projects that table back out into the world and assumes the table exists exactly like that, radiating tableness from its own side, completely independent of your mind. That is true grasping. It aggressively glues a false label of independence onto dependent parts. So yes, a conventional truth is, by definition, a concealing falsity.
But it is still called a truth. It's not called a conventional lie.
It's called a truth only to a specific kind of observer, an ignorant one. To an ordinary mind, the table appears to exist entirely from its own side. The mind grasps at that solid appearance and says, "This is true."
Because it functions.
Think of a master illusionist conjuring wild horse in a village square. The crowd gasps, right? People jump out of the way so they aren't trampled. The horse functions to create real fear, real awe.
Sure.
The audience, deceived by the trick, believes the horse is a solid, independent animal. But the horse is a total deception. Treating a conventional truth as a valid reality is like an audience member insisting the magician's horse must be real simply because it successfully made them jump out of the way. We cannot validate an illusion just because our true grasping minds fall for it.
Wait, I have to push back hard on this. I do not accept that functioning is merely a symptom of illusion. If a magician conjures a fire, I will freeze to death.
What?
No. Let me finish. If a builder stacks actual bricks, I stay warm. If I trip on that solid floor we started with and break my arm, the bone snaps. The x-ray shows a fracture. The cast is made of plaster.
Yeah, conventional plaster.
But that sequence of cause and effect is flawlessly rigid. You cannot break your arm on a magician's horse. The concrete weight of a brick, the very real suffering of a broken arm, that flawless functionality proves there is a valid, functioning reality at play, not just a psychological projection.
Your instinct to defend the reality of pain is completely natural, but you are conflating functionality with inherent existence.
How so?
Let's use the mirage of a lake in the desert. The appearance of the water is undeniably functional. The thirsty traveler sees it, their heart rate spikes, they expend physical energy running toward it. It functions to create profound physical exhaustion and psychological hope.
Right.
Yet it entirely lacks the wet, solid substance it projects.
But a mirage cannot actually quench thirst. A conventional cup of water does. The brick actually builds a wall that keeps the wind out. That's a massive, unbridgeable distinction.
It quenches a conventional thirst for a conventional body, which then leads to conventional satisfaction, all of which are happening entirely within the framework of the concealing falsity. The physical pain of breaking your arm is a conventional arm hitting a conventional floor. It is internally consistent, yes, but it is a truth only to the mind that fails to see reality.
So you're saying the pain isn't real? I mean, if I'm listening to this right now, I'm probably thinking, you're telling me the gravity holding me in my car, the frustration I feel in traffic, the pain in my back, this is all fundamentally a deception? That sounds incredibly dismissive of actual human experience.
I'm not saying the pain doesn't hurt. I'm saying the way it exists is fundamentally different than the way it appears. Look at what happens to a highly realized being, an Arya, when their mind enters meditative equipoise, which is a state of flawless, non-conceptual focus on ultimate reality.
Okay, the meditative equipoise.
Right. When they drop all conceptual labels and true grasping, what happens to the table, the brick, the broken arm? They do not appear. At all. If the brick had any valid solid reality from its own side, if it were truly existent, it would appear to the highest, most supreme wisdom. But it vanishes. That tells us that this entire functional framework is strictly a feature of ignorance.
I see the logic. But the fact that the brick doesn't appear to the Arya in meditative equipoise doesn't invalidate its conventional existence. It simply confirms its ultimate emptiness. Those are two different dimensions. Let's look at how we actually navigate this dependent world. I want to talk about language because it beautifully illustrates how functionality thrives on emptiness.
Okay, let's look at language.
Think about the fluidity of cultural labels. The round, crunchy fruit that falls from a tree is called an apple in English, but it's called a manzana in Spanish. The furniture we are sitting at is a table in English, but the exact same object is called a changtse in Tibetan.
Yes, they are just temporary local agreements, mind-made labels.
Exactly. And look at what that proves. The fact that these distinct words can be swapped effortlessly proves that conventional agreements are highly effective cooperative tools. We don't need the object to possess a fixed, absolute, inherent core for it to work perfectly in our lives. The fluidity of cultural labels shows that conventional reality isn't a rigid prison of ignorance. It's a flexible, functional framework that successfully binds our shared world together. We agree to call it an apple, we buy it, we eat it, it nourishes us. That is a profound validity.
You are using the fluidity of cultural labels to praise the utility of conventional agreements, but you are still attributing a hidden solidity to the object that supposedly receives those labels. You are assuming there is a real thing sitting there waiting to be called an apple or a manzana.
Well, there is something there.
This brings us right to the 7-point analytical search, which is the mechanism used to shatter that assumption.
I agree the analytical search is vital, but I think it reveals a dependent reality, not a meaningless void.
Let's walk through it and see. Let's take that wooden table. If two people are arguing over whether it is truly inherently a table from its own side, we put it to the test. Let's bring an axe and find the table.
All right.
Point one, is the table identical to its parts? Is the leg the table?
Well, no, the leg is just a leg.
Right. Are the screws the table? Is the flat wooden top the table?
No.
No. If it were identically its parts, we would have many tables, not one. Okay, point two. Is the table completely separate from its parts? Like if we chop away all the wood and remove all the screws, is there a ghostly, invisible table left hovering in the room?
Of course not.
Okay, so it's not the parts. And it's not separate from the parts. Does it inherently possess its parts, like a person holding an umbrella?
No, a table is not a separate entity commanding its legs.
Right. When we chop it down to splinters and then chop the splinters down to atoms, we never find a core table-ness. We only find smaller and smaller parts. So where is the table? It doesn't exist out there. It is entirely an imputation by the mind placed over a collection of parts.
Right, but those parts exist. I can point to them. I can weigh them. I can burn the wood.
You are measuring the parts. You are not measuring the table. The conventional object is deeply deceptive because it appears to your eye as a unified, solid table radiating from its own side, when in fact, out there in the physical world, it is just an arrangement of wood fibers. The table only exists because your mind synthesized it and agreed to it. It is a trick.
It's not a trick. It's a relationship. This is where we have to integrate these ideas. You are treating the splinters, the emptiness, as the real truth, and the table as a mere mistake. But the Prasangika system insists that conventional truth and ultimate truth are one nature, different isolates.
One nature, different isolates?
Yes. Let's unpack that, because it's the crux of this entire philosophy. One nature means that they are identical in essence. Think of the planet Venus. When we look in the morning, we call it the morning star. When we look at sunset, we call it the evening star.
Okay.
They are different conceptual pathways, different isolates, but they share one identical nature, the planet Venus. The table and its emptiness are exactly like that. You cannot have the emptiness of a table without the conventional table. They are mutually exclusive. A table is definitely not an emptiness, and an emptiness is not a table, yet they are inseparable. This means the conventional truth cannot be dismissed as an annoying illusion we just have to put up with. It is the necessary vehicle for ultimate truth.
I accept the one nature premise, but you are glossing over the different isolates part, which is where your argument really falls apart. Yes, the morning star and the evening star are different conceptual pathways, but the two truths are judged by entirely different standards of reality.
How so?
Let's look at the ultimate truth, the Dandam Denpa. In Tibetan, Dan means fact or an object found by supreme wisdom.
Dom means supreme or amazing. To that highly realized mind, the way emptiness appears perfectly matches the way it actually exists. There is zero discrepancy. It appears empty of inherent existence, and it is.
Okay, there is no discordance there.
Exactly. But now look at the conceptual pathway of the conventional truth. Its very nature is discordant. The way the table appears to us, as a solid, unified entity existing entirely from its own side, is completely contradictory to its actual way of existing, which we just proved with the axe.
Right.
It exists as a dependent collection of parts and mental labels. So, being true from the perspective of a true grasping mind is the very definition of being false. Yes, they share one nature, but one is a supreme, amazing fact, and the other is fundamentally a falsity. You cannot elevate them to equal footing just because they share a nature.
I am not elevating them to equal footing in terms of ultimate reality. I am saying they are mutually dependent. If I want to find the ultimate truth, the emptiness, I have to first locate the conventional truth. I have to find the table before I can analyze how it lacks inherent existence. If we aggressively label conventional truths purely as falsities, we risk dismissing the real suffering of the world.
How does recognizing illusion dismiss suffering?
Because if a person is starving and I tell myself, well, the person doesn't inherently exist and the food doesn't inherently exist, so this is all a concealing falsity, I lose my grounding in ethical action. Karma, birth, aging, sickness, and death, these are conventional truths. We need to fiercely respect the conventional truth of a person's suffering in order to generate the compassion required to help them.
That is a total misunderstanding of how this system applies to ethics. Seeing conventional reality as an illusion doesn't kill compassion. It purifies it. When we observe the strict laws of cause and effect, giving food to the starving person, we do it because we know actions have conventional consequences.
Right.
But we do it without clinging to the rigid, inherently existent identity of the savior or the victim. When you help someone, recognizing their conventional suffering, but knowing that ultimately neither the helper, the helped, nor the help itself possesses independent solidity, that is true freedom. That prevents burnout, it prevents ego. If you cling to the validity of the situation, you just feed the true grasping mind that causes suffering in the first place.
But the ordinary mind doesn't naturally see existence by mere name. We have to start where we are. We live in the conventional.
Which is exactly why we must aggressively treat the world like the illusionist treats his conjured horse. The illusionist can see the horse. He can walk around it on stage so he doesn't bump into it. But he fundamentally knows, at every second, that it is a trick. He never falls in love with it. He never fears it. The danger of your position, of celebrating the brilliant functionality of conventional reality, is that you are encouraging the audience to go on believing the horse is real just because it's entertaining.
If I'm encouraging belief, it's only a belief in the dependent nature of things. So to summarize where my argument lands, my position is that conventional reality, through its functional existence and our shared cultural agreements, is an indispensable valid framework. It is the necessary ground of our daily lives.
Yeah.
Because it exists as one nature with ultimate reality, its flawless functionality, the fact that the floor holds us, that medicine cures illness, that actions have consequences, must be deeply respected as a vital half of reality, not just tolerated as a cosmic mistake.
And my position remains that while we are indeed forced to navigate this physical and social framework, we must never lose sight of the fact that conventional truths are inherently deceptive. They are falsities. They aggressively project a solid, independent existence that completely contradicts reality. They are true only to the deep ignorance of a true grasping mind. And our ultimate goal must be to see through that mirage, no matter how functional it appears to be.
It seems where we genuinely converge is on the profound brilliance of this philosophical framework itself. By deeply grasping this presentation of the two truths.
Precisely. We don't fall into the extreme of absolutism, believing things are solid, independent, and inherently existent, because we recognize ultimate emptiness through tools like the 7-point analytical search.
Right.
But we also avoid the extreme of nihilism, believing nothing exists at all, because we acknowledge the functional, dependent nature of conventional agreements.
It is a razor's edge of a balance,
And if there's one thing a listener can take away, there is immense practical value here for your everyday life. Think about the last time you were furiously angry in traffic. The car that cut you off, the driver, your own outrage, they felt so immovably solid, so inherently real from their own side. But if you apply this framework, you can start to look at those frustrations as mere conventional truths.
Exactly. They are momentarily useful for navigating the situation, like hitting the brakes, but they are entirely empty of that absolute, unchangeable solidity you projected onto them. The anger loses its grip when you realize you're yelling at a magician's horse.
There is so much rich material here that we've only begun to touch on. The mechanics of meditative equipoise, how an Arya actually achieves that supreme mind without the contamination of deceptive appearances. That's a topic we'll have to explore in the future.
It is the ultimate goal of examining these concepts, to eventually see reality exactly as it is.
But as we leave this conversation, let's go back to that floor you're resting your feet on right now. It pushes back against your shoes, it holds your weight, it functions perfectly to keep you supported. Is it a valid, indispensable foundation that gives your life meaning and ground, or is it flawless deception, a mirage of solidity projected by a mind grasping at shadows? We will leave that for you to decide.